Hello.
Hey, John, it's Jeff Hughes calling from the Bears Block.
How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for doing this. I've been a fan of your work
My
for a long
pleasure.
time. So I'm already recording, so it's kind of informal. It's not very radio showy. But let me ask you a question, John, because I was doing a little bit of research, and I've always wanted to know this. As somebody who's been covering football for 30 years, you've been there, you're in Houston, and Bud Adams decides mid-90s to take the Oilers out and you move them to Nashville. What do you do as the Houston guy? What do you do for those 5 years before McNair comes back into the picture, before the Texans come into the picture? Like, what was that city like as a football town? Because we know they're crazy about football. What was it like there?
Well, first of all, Bud Adams was run out of town by the politicians who wouldn't even have a referendum on a new stadium. We could have kept the Oilers for $186 million in public money, and it's cost about $1.5 billion to replace them. And so he moved to Nashville after the 1996 season. I covered the NFL for 8 years, traveled, covered any game I wanted to go to, spent as much money as I wanted to spend. And sometimes I'd cover, like when they'd open on a Thursday, the league, I'd cover Thursday game, Sunday game, Monday game. When they went to Saturdays in December, I'd do Saturday, Sunday, and Monday games, all playoffs. So I had a blast because I never had to go to a bad one. I just picked the game of the week, and I went and wrote about it, and we ran about four open pages on Monday devoted to the NFL, and because even though the Oilers were gone, didn't mean people didn't like football. Unfortunately, the Cowboys got a lot more attention in the Chronicle then than they deserved. But then when the Texans got the franchise, I didn't want to cover them because they were going to lose the first few years. And then circumstances changed with our bosses, and they asked me if I'd do it in 2005 for 1 year. And I said, well, yeah, it's their fourth year. They'll be competing for the playoffs. They were 7-9 last year. So I took over the beat, and they went 2-14. And so the economy changed. We no longer had the money. I think one of the reasons the Chronicle shrunk in pages and size is because of all the money I spent those 8 years. And so I started covering them in 05, and I've covered them ever since. And it's a lot more fun today than it was then, and when they were losing.
Well, you know, it's funny because my first thought was it's so inconceivable to somebody in the city of Chicago to think the Bears would ever go anywhere. What does the fan do? So the fan in Houston, did they in the back of their head say football will come back, we're going to stay loyal to the city of Houston? Did they go, did a lot of them continue to follow the Oilers as they went out and became the Titans? Did they switch to the Cow? I mean, what does that fan in Houston do?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of fans here from other cities because we're a transient city. There's a lot of Steeler fans, Packer fans, Browns, Bills, unfortunately, Cowboys, Bears. A lot of people moved here in the 70s in the oil boom from other cities, especially up in the north. And so the ones that adopted the Oilers, they were like the Oilers. Their hometown team was number one, and the Oilers were 1A. And then when the team left, I thought at the time the NFL wanted to put the franchise in L.A. And if you remember, they gave L.A. an exclusive negotiating period, and L.A. could not come up with an owner, could not come up with a suitable stadium site, where Houston had that with a billionaire businessman, Bob McNair, who wanted to own the franchise and was the antithesis of Bud Adams. Everybody hated Bud Adams. It wouldn't do anything he suggested, where Bob McNair was so respected. Anything he wanted, he got. And when he got the franchise away from L.A., people here who thought we might never get another one were just, you know, kind of out of their minds in excitement.
I look at these two franchises, and one of the overarching similarities that I see in them right now with the Bears and the Texans, both ownership groups showing loyalty to head coaches during downtime. And I think it's paid off for both of them, as you're seeing, I think, Kubiak and Lovie come into their own right now as head coaches and really take the step. And I think they're both on pace possibly to meet in a Super Bowl. You never know. What is Gary Kubiak like as a leader of that team, and how has he managed to stay confident through some of the lean years he's had here over the last 5 years?
Lovie Smith and Gary Kubiak are both native Texans who love their home state. And Lovie, once he left to go to college, has never been back to play or coach. Kubiak played at Texas A&M, then he went to the Broncos. And then when the Texans hired him in 2006, he came home. And they're a lot alike in that they're pretty low-key, but they can blow a gasket. Don't usually do it to embarrass people. Do it behind the scenes. They have good staffs. When Rod Marinelli, who was on one of the greatest coaching staffs in history with Lovie under Tony Dungy, I'll say one of the greatest defensive staffs. Their offense was terrible. But along with Herm Edwards, they had one of the all-time great staffs. And so Marinelli bombed out, of course, as the head coach with the Lions. And I know the Texans tried to hire him as defensive coordinator, but he wanted to be reunited with Lovie. And, of course, Rod's specialty is a four-man front that gets a quarterback. Lovie's specialty is the Tampa 2 that works so well when you got a linebacker who can drop in the middle of the field like Urlacher still can. And so they got the athletes that fit the system. And then I think Lovie, as a defensive coordinator, is conservative. He likes to run the ball a lot, even though he's got a quarterback with a gun and a receiver playing better than ever. You know, if they could, they would control the clock as much as they could. Texans lead the league in average time of possession. Texans lead the league in fewest turnovers. And, of course, Lovie and the Bears lead the league and the most turnovers forced. So both these guys have good staffs. They don't let things get to them. They have patient owners, and they believe in themselves. But they're also flexible. I'll guarantee you that Lovie Smith doesn't do everything right now the way he did it 5 or 6 years ago, and I know that with Kubiak. Coaches grow and mature into better coaches just like players do. The ones that don't, the ones that think they have all the answers to go with their big egos, those are the ones that bounce around.
Well, you know, it's funny, John, because it's the thing I think that Lovie has grown up with the most is when he fired Ron Rivera, he brought Bob Babich, his buddy, made him the defensive coordinator. It blew up in his face, and it seems he has now shown more self-confidence to be able to put a Marinelli. He put a March there. He has a Tice there. All these former head coaches, he puts these guys on his staff now, and there's a confidence to say, hey, I'm putting the best coaches on my staff I can, which leads me right to Wade Phillips, because since Wade Phillips has come to the Houston Texans, and I know a Phillips returning to Houston must be the most glorious thing for someone who's clearly in love with the city of Houston. Wade Phillips seems to me to be the definitive factor right now on that team. What has it meant since he's arrived?
First of all, when you're an NFL head coach, your friends will get you fired. When you hire people just to get them on your staff because they're buddies and loyal to you, that can get, it's gotten so many coaches fired through the decades. It almost got Kubiak fired. His first two defensive coordinators, Richard Smith and Frank Bush, were friends of his he coached with at Denver, and both of them became coordinators, and they never called the defense. Then when they fired Frank Bush, they look around, and there's Wade twiddling his thumbs, spending Jerry Jones' paycheck after he got fired in the middle of the season by the Dallas Cowboys. And so they hired Wade, said, here, defense is yours. That's what great coaches do. Sean Payton did it with Greg Williams. Mike McCarthy did it with Dom Capers. Those guys won Super Bowls doing that. And you got to be a strong personality to do it, to not be envious, to not mind that a coach on the other side of the ball getting a lot of attention. Wade gets a lot of attention here for his defense. He doesn't seek it, but he gets it. Kubiak is not the jealous type. You know, as far as he's concerned, that's just one less thing we ask him about. But Wade is, you know, Wade still wants to be a head coach. He's going to be He's 65. I don't think he ever will be one, even though he's more than 20 games over 500. But he's seen every situation. His players have confidence in him because they know he's seen every situation and nothing surprises him. And Wade's best at creating mismatches. Kubiak said when all those years he was a coordinator in Denver, he went up against Wade's defenses a lot. And he said, I've never seen a guy create more mismatches than Wade Phillips.
Wade is, to me, the defensive equivalent of Norv in a lot of ways, because when they're coordinating a team, they are just about as good as it gets down for down in coordinating that side of the ball. And I think Wade's had more success as a head coach, but they just are the cream of the crop when it comes to coordinators. One guy that the Bears could never find a home for on defense seems to have settled in Houston. That's Danielle Manning. And for Bears fans who don't get a chance to see him play a lot for the Texans, how has he been as a starting safety there, and why has he seemed to have thrived outside of the structure of the cover two?
In free agency 2 years ago, after the lockout, the Texans were pursuing Nnamdi Asamoah, and everybody thought he was going to go to the Jets to play with Darrell Revis. And the general manager, Rick Smith, was involved in that, and he had talked to Jonathan Joseph, corner for the Bengals, and then all of a sudden, Joseph's agent says, look, pull the trigger, and we're going to sign with somebody. And he had to make a decision. Do we stay in a race for Asamoah, possibly losing, or do we go ahead and get Jonathan Joseph and have money left to get a safety like Danielle Manning? So they got Joseph for $23 million guaranteed, and they got Manning for $9 million. He came in with a really, really good new secondary coach. John Hope did a great job here. John was fired by Kubiak. He went up there, and he's done just a tremendous job. And the guy that took his place here, David Gibbs, did not do a good job. They fired him. Vance Joseph came for the 49ers. He changed everything in the secondary. And all of a sudden, Danielle Manning gets here. The safeties have to be interchangeable to be able to play up or back. And Danielle has just fit this system like a glove. Wade Phillips said in training camp, what he was able to do in the off-season program, it's almost like this defense is second nature to him. It was made for him. And he said, I can't wait to see when he gets back on the field and can hit people. And he's played very, very well against the pass as well as the run.
And does he return kicks at all for Houston or no? Do they
no,
ever put him back there?
They won't do that. He was real good at it last year, but they said nope. He suffered last year a fractured tibia, and it healed fast. And they didn't want to put him on kickoffs after that, because he averaged 27 yards, but they didn't want to take a chance that the double duty would hurt him. And so he's played strictly safety, done a really good job. But we all know if they use him as a kickoff returner, that'd be good news for them, bad news for the opposition.
Yeah, I mean, it was the threat the Bears had for years, which was they'd give Hester a playoff, and they had a guy almost just as good as him returning kicks at the start of the third quarter, which is where they tended to use him. So I look at this Texans lineup, but I don't see an answer to this question, so maybe you have one. Are there liabilities on this team? Are there positions of any definitive weakness?
Interior, I think that when they lost Brian Cushing for the season with a torn ACL against the Jets, it left them vulnerable between the tackles. The team they played immediately, the Packers, it didn't hurt them because the way Aaron Rodgers threw the ball that day, it didn't matter who was covering, and Cushing wouldn't have been covering down the field. The next game against Baltimore, they should have pounded the ball between the tackles with Ray Rice, didn't do it. Then they played Buffalo. Buffalo had averaged 150 yards a game rushing and had two backs. They didn't try it. They gained 83 yards. So no team has consistently tried to run between the tackles. And that's just with Brady James, who the Cowboys didn't want back, and a good backup, Tim Dobbins, as the starter. That seems to be a place they're vulnerable.
Well, I mean, you will find out, because I do think you're starting to see the Bears commit a little bit more to the run, and they like to force it between the tackles. You're a Hall of Fame voter, right, John?
I am.
So here's the question Bears fans debate all the time. I'm going to put you on the spot. Say Brian Urlacher, say the knee deteriorates, say this is the last year. Let's say they don't win a Super Bowl this year. When Brian Urlacher comes up in front of you in a few years, where do you think you're leaning in terms of his Hall of Fame credentials?
Well, first of all, I think Dick Butkus wrote the book on playing linebacker in the NFL. And Urlacher, I think that the voters will understand how much time he spent in coverage in a defense that was tailored, that you've got to be able to do that if you're the middle linebacker. And because Urlacher, he commands so much respect, and it's still early, even though he's had problems. He's playing great this year, I expect. I think that he will get strong consideration for the Hall of Fame.
Well, I think we hope so. I mean, he's been sort of the iconic figure here. So should we talk about your movie career? Because when I started doing research on you, John, I saw Cook County, and I'm now trying to get a hold of it because I wanted to have a little movie review section here. How did you end up in movies? How does a sports writer end up in movies not playing a sports writer?
Well, Cook County was a movie about drug addiction in the piney woods of East Texas, and the director never gave me a good answer about why he called it Cook County, but I know if you Google it, you'll see a lot of it, and a lot of interviews, you'll see a lot of videos that I did promoting it, and of course, you know, a lot of Chicago. And you can go on Netflix and get it video on demand. Anson Mount, who is the star of Hell on Wheels on AMC, he's the main one. Common is his co-star. And I knew the director, the guy. He emailed me one day and said, I'm a writer and director from Houston. I know you like movies. I've been listening to you on the radio talk about them for years. I've written a part specifically for you. I'd like to talk to you. If you don't have time, no problem. I called him back at 3 in the morning when I read that email. And I had done The Rookie because of Baylor director, and I went to Baylor. John Lee Hancock, who later did The Blind Side, he did The Rookie, put me in a cameo, got my SAG card. You know, they cut my lines. Did Invincible, The Game Plan, and Secretariat, and The Longest Yard remake with Adam Sandler. And I've got one coming out that if people Google it, called Spring Breakers, the movie, with James Franco, Selena Gomez, Vanessa Hudgens. It's going to get a lot of attention after the first of the year, because Selena Gomez and Vanessa Hudgens and Ashley Benson from Pretty Little Liars, they're some bad girls. And they end up in the courtroom with a judge. I'm the judge. I had to spend 8.5 hours with them in their little string bikinis. And I said, we're going to have 50 takes. We had 53. And that movie's going to make good money, and I'm going to make some nice residuals.
That's as good as, that's every sports writer's dream, to be in that room with those two girls for 53 takes. I think
I was more interested in James Franco because I'm a big fan. So I talked to him and looked at them.
Well, that's probably the way to do it. He is McLean_on_NFL on Twitter, chronicle.com, cron.com. Thank you so much. This was really a pleasure, and hopefully we'll have dinner together in New Orleans in February.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.